So it's October 29, 2021, and we're going to be meditating on the 10th canto, chapters 13 and 14, and the material for this seminar is taken from the Bhagavatam itself, from Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, from the tikas of our acharyas, Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami, and also from the Ananda Vrindavan Champu of Kavi Karnapur and the Gopal Champu of Jiva Goswami. So I've put this all together. We'll be focusing primarily on chapter 13 and looking at a few notable prayers from chapter 14 and then the end of chapter 14, where Sukadeva Goswami says that anyone who chants, hears, or desires to do so of these stories will have all their spiritual desires fulfilled. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So what's particularly significant about chapter 13 of the 10th canto is that it was the last thing that Srila Prabhupada translated and commented on before he departed this world. Jayadeva Maharaj has explained that this last portion was in fact an extraordinary collaboration between Srila Prabhupada and Prajumna. While Srila Prabhupada was lying on his bed close to death, Prajumna, having studied the Sanskrit verses and the Sanskrit commentary Srila Prabhupada preferred, would read them to him in Sanskrit in small portions. Some portions Prajumna would translate and read out, some Srila Prabhupada himself would translate, and Srila Prabhupada would comment. The translations and commentary recorded on tape were then blended and edited together to become the text for chapter 13. And again, chanting or hearing this story, or even desiring to do so, will fulfill all of one's spiritual desires. So this story takes place on Balaram's birthday. So Balaram was back in the village, getting ready to celebrate his birthday. And on that day, the great demon Agastara was killed. The demigods were celebrating all the way up to the higher planets. And Lord Brahma heard the celebration from nearby. You know, if your neighbors are having a big party, so, you know, you may hear that there's a party going on. And so he starts saying, what's going on? And he sees that Agastara had attained Swarupta Mukti. He had attained the liberation of getting the same form as the Lord. And he went by Lord Brahma's planet on the way to Vaikuntha. And so Lord Brahma saw this and he was completely astonished. And he came down to earth to see what are these pastimes going on. So Sukadeva Goswami mentions that this killing of Agastara was told by the cowherd boys to their families 1 year after it happened. And this is important, and we'll come to this kind of later on, about how generally every day the cowherd boys would come back and they'd say, oh, this is what Krishna did today. This is what Krishna did today. But the day Agastara was killed, that didn't happen. A year later, they came home and said, guess what Krishna did today? He killed the... But he had killed him a year before. And so Maharaj Parikshit is thinking, this is amazing. You know, some of Krishna's potencies must be involved with this. You know, if we think of that, the whole Bhagavatam is all full of questions and answers. The speaker is enthused by the questions of the audience. And the speaker also, though, knows how to instigate questions. Like they say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Oh, but you can put salt in his oats. So what the expert speakers do is they put teasers into what they say so that the listeners will say, huh? And so Maharaj Pariksit was like, huh? 1 year? What happened? Tell me. Tell me what happened. Tell me what happened. So the cowherd boys, after the killing of Agasura, they were looking for a perfect place for lunch. Srila Prabhupada notes in another place how practically every day a demon would come, because otherwise the boys were so busy playing they wouldn't stop to take lunch. So they found a perfect place to take lunch, and the cowherd boy said, Krishna, you must be hungry. It's getting late. We've been playing and playing, and it's been getting late. Look, there's very soft sands. Like, of course, the place in Vrindavan, Ramanreti, they're very beautiful sands. And not only are there beautiful soft sands, but there's echoing sounds of birds. The peacocks are making their loud noises, but all the different birds are making their Vrindavan sounds. The leaves are rustling. There's the scent of lotus flowers. There's a circle of trees with intertwined branches, creating a canopy of shade. The calves were tied to the trees nearby and had soft grass there to drink after they had drunk from the Yamuna. So the cowherd boys were eating. Krishna was in the center. Everyone was facing him, and they all saw that he was facing them. This reminds us of Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, text 14, where Krishna says that his faces are everywhere. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatan Goswami says that each cowherd boy thinks, I am Krishna's favorite. And actually, each cowherd boy is Krishna's favorite. So somehow, although there's so many cowherd boys and they're all in a circle, they're all perceiving, Krishna's only looking at me. And the circles, there were concentric circles of cowherd boys around Krishna, and it looked like the color of the rainbow, from red in the center to violet at the edge. The boys were imagining all kinds of things to be their plates. You know, they didn't bring along like paper plates. They certainly didn't bring along styrofoam plates. But they didn't even bring leaf plates with them. They just collected things from the forest to use as their plates. Some of them use flowers as their plates. Some use leaves. Some use bark of trees. Some use rocks. And some use the baskets that they had brought their food in. They were sharing food with each other and laughing and laughing. One boy took the vegetables out of a samosa and put jasmine flowers into it instead. And then gave that to another boy. Here, I'm sharing my samosa with you. Then the boy started hitting the boy that had put the flowers in the samosa. And so that boy started running away. And they were all joking like that. They said, there's a bee that's going to bite Maru Mangal. A bee is going to bite a brahmana. And then they got Maru Mangal to jump away, and then they would steal some of his food. Sometimes the boys would entice the monkeys to come and steal the food. I know when we take prasadam at the VIHE in Vrindavan, years ago we used to just eat out on the veranda, and we had to have guards with sticks. And if you looked away for a moment, especially at chapati, they would just come and take your chapati. And now we eat upstairs, and they put a monkey fence, and so the monkeys are outside shaking on the fence. But the boys would actually call the monkeys to steal the food. And then Krishna, he's just a little boy. And he's, you know, the Vedic culture is that you wipe yourself in the toilet with your left hand, and you eat with your right hand, you give and receive gifts with your right hand. So normally you're eating with your right hand. It's something that we teach children. But Krishna was eating with both hands. And Krishna, in his left hand, he had a mixture of rice, yogurt, and fruit. I know Purva Prabhu calls this Krishna's surprise. And you could see the rice, yogurt, and fruit in his hand showing through his petal-like fingers. At this time, Krishna's wish-fulfilling energy, his Ichha Shakti, and his pastime energy, his Lila Shakti, entice Lord Brahma to do something that would give great pleasure to Krishna and all the residents of Vrindavan. Now, although the cows had been tied up, somehow, I guess the cowherd boys hadn't tied them very securely. They're very young children. And the little calves, they wandered away, enticed by fresh grasses. They do this sometimes, you know. After all, they're animals. A very nice Rupa Goswami explains in the Vyavichari Bhav section of the Southern Ocean of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu how the animals in Krishna's pastimes, although they're certainly capable of feeling all emotions, they're not like an ordinary animal in this world. They take the mood of an animal to have that kind of reciprocation with Krishna. So the calves were like, there's fresh grasses. Then Krishna's friends became very afraid because they're supposed to be taking care of the animals. Now we know that all fear vanishes for those who are Krishna conscious, abhayachana nadavrindare. But there's also fear. Fear is one of the secondary staibhas, one of the secondary rasas. And it's also, there are many different kinds of fear as vyavichari bhavs. And so it's not that these things don't exist within Krishna's pastimes. Arupa Goswami explains at length in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu how this fear is actually ecstatic. So it's not the ordinary fear of someone in this world who's influenced by Rajagun and Tamagun. And then Krishna says, don't disturb your lunch. Don't disturb your lunch. Don't be afraid. I'll personally look. Just yesterday I was hearing this story about the Govinda deity and how in Vrindavan the king used to worship the Govinda deity every day from like 5 in the morning until noon, and no one could disturb him on pain of imprisonment or death. And so once when the Mughal soldiers were attacking, the prime minister didn't want to disturb the king. But so he just rang the temple bell, and Govinda Dev himself came out, assuming the form of a king, and destroyed all of the soldiers. So sometimes Krishna says, my dear devotee, don't be disturbed. I'll take care of it. So Krishna went to personally look. And when he went to look, he still had his food in his left hand. He still had that yogurt, rice, and fruit in his left hand. And he had some pickles in his right hand, so he had food in each of his hands. And he's this little boy, and he's personally looking. He looked in the mountains. He looked in the mountain caves. He looked in the valleys. And while Krishna is out looking for his calves, Lord Brahma steals the calves, and he steals the boys. Now, Lord Brahma is materially born, and therefore he is subject to the 4 defects of cheating, imperfect senses, being illusioned, and making mistakes. Lord Brahma wanted to see Krishna's pastimes, having been incited by Agasura going to Vaikuntha, and he wanted to see Krishna's power. Now, Balaram's not taken because, again, it's Balaram's birthday and he's home. Now, the real boys were covered by Yogamaya, and Lord Brahma took Maya boys, just like Ravana took a Maya Sita. These boys and calves are expansions of Krishna. Ananda Chinmaya Rasava Pratibhavita Bhista Virya Eva Nijrupa Taya Kalabhis Goloka Eva Nivasatya Kilatma Bhuta Govinda Mani Purusharamitam Maham Bhajami. But Krishna was looking for them as if bewildered in order to bewilder Brahma. So for Brahma to think that Krishna was bewildered, he acted as if he was bewildered. Now, it's also very interesting when Rupa Goswami describes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Krishna's qualities as part of the impetus for love, that Krishna is the object, the vishaya, of the basic alambana stimulants, the vibhava, for our love. So he lists all of Krishna's qualities. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the list of 64 qualities of Krishna that's given in Nectar of Devotion. But then it's explained Krishna does not have faults, and there's 18 faults listed. But Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, says that Krishna actually has 16 of those apparent faults, but he has them in love. And one of those faults is bewilderment. And one example giving is how Krishna was apparently bewildered. Wait a minute. I went to look for the calves. I can't find them anywhere. When I come back to the riverbank, the boys are also gone. What is going on? So he appears to be bewildered, but this is love. Right? So then after searching extensively, he apparently understood what was going on. And to bewilder, this time Lord Brahma had gone. Like, okay, I did it. I took the boys and the cows. And then to please all the parents, Krishna expands himself, the parent humans and the parent cows. Krishna expands himself and becomes all of the boys and all of the calves with every individual characteristic. So the particular clothes they like to wear, you know, each of us has our favorite colors, right? Like Nandamars likes to wear green, says Madhyasoda likes to wear rainbow colors, you know, Lalita Gopi likes to wear saris like peacock feather colors. Shaka likes to wear saris with stars, right? We're individuals, we're persons. And Krishna expanded with every individual characteristic of each boy and each calf. Not just how they looked, what they liked, their opinions, their tastes. We have individual tastes. Prabhupada wrote a letter to Ekayani. She was married to Gopal Krishna Maharaj when he was a householder. And Prabhupada wrote, hey, you and your husband may have different opinions, but that does not mean you're not both devotees. So even though you're devotees, there's still difference of opinion because we're persons. So these different boys had different natures, different opinions, different tastes, different clothes. Each of the calves were different. Then Krishna continued his pastimes with these expansions of himself. And you remember we mentioned earlier how the boys would always come home and say, hey, what Krishna did today, but that day they didn't because they weren't the boys. Somehow nobody noticed. You know, like imagine someone comes home from work, right, and tells their spouse, this is what happened at work, this is what happens at work. Right? The spouse who's home said, this is what happens at home, this is what happened at home. Right? And imagine if your spouse did that every day and then all of a sudden one day they didn't say anything. You know, your kid comes home from school. Every day they tell you what happened at school. One day they just don't tell you. But nobody noticed. Now, what Prabhupada would call the elderly, cowherd men and cowherd women, the adults, they love their own children. But they often would think, oh, if only I could have Krishna as my son. If only I could love Krishna like Mother Yasoda, Nanda Maharaj. So now Krishna actually became their children. And their love for their children, their so-called children, who are actually Krishna, keeps increasing and increasing and increasing. And before that, the mothers made a distinction between their son and others and Krishna, and now they didn't. They didn't make a distinction between anyone's children, their love for their children, their love for their friends' children, their love for Krishna. They didn't distinguish anymore. They were loving everyone with the same intensity. Because Krishna is subordinate to prema. Now please listen very carefully. We said that Krishna became the same as each cowherd boy and each calf. Well, he did. But not completely. Not completely. Because the parents, the human parents and the cow parents, they love these children more. Because Krishna is subordinate to love, to prema. And so their relationship with Krishna, who is now their children, was different than their relationship with their actual children. It was deeper, it was more loving, it was more expansive. And what's amazing here is that nobody seemed to notice. Even Balaram, and we could talk at length at that, you know. Balaram and Krishna, they're the same person. But even Balaram didn't know. They didn't notice. Nobody said to each other, there's something strange. Nobody said anything. Nobody noticed. They were just so full of love and happiness. One day, after almost a whole year had gone by, so about 5 or 6 days before Balaram's birthday, the older men, and again, we don't mean like old, not like my age, the fathers of the cowherd boys, were taking out the cows to pasture. So the cowherd men also went out into the Vrindavan forest every day with the cows. And they had the cows up on Govardhan Hill. Now you'll see this today if you go to Vrindavan, that people will take their animals, their cows, their goats, up on Govardhan Hill. So because this is not Balaram's birthday, 5 to 6 days before Balaram's birthday, Balaram is also there with Krishna and all of these cowherd boys and calves that are all actually Krishna. And they're walking at the bottom of Govardhan Hill again, if you've been to India. So you're walking on the path at the bottom of Govardhan Hill and you look up and you see there's some Brijbasis with their cows or their goats up on the hill. And when the cows saw these calves that were actually Krishna, even though they had younger calves. Now, generally with animals, once they have a new baby, they don't really have that much of a relationship with their older children. Because they are giving milk to the younger ones, they're not giving milk to the older ones. It's generally like that. But these cows, even though they had already had another set of calves in this time, when as soon as they smelled and saw these calves that were actually Krishna, they started running down Govardhan Hill as if they had one pair of legs. You know where the legs go like this? Instead of four legs, it's going like two legs. And their raised head and tail, if you've ever seen cows, like if they've been in barns all winter and they come out in the spring, how they're running. Now those of you again who've been to India or if you've just seen pictures of Govardhan Hill, it's very rocky. I mean, like, you really couldn't run down Govardhan Hill, especially if you're a cow. I mean, maybe if you're a goat, but not if you're a cow. And some of them didn't care about this rough path. They were so eager to see Krishna. And their milk was just pouring out of their udders on the ground. And when they got to the bottom of Govardhan Hill, they were licking their cows with such intensity as if they were going to swallow them. So Krishna likes to show how much his devotees love him. And how, because of love, the devotees were overcome all obstacles. There was a song when I was a teenager, popular song. Ain't no mountain high enough, ain't no river wide enough to keep me from getting to you, babe. Of course, materially, that's not true. If the mountain's high enough and the river's wide enough, then we stop loving. But with Krishna, it's like that. It doesn't matter, the obstacles. And we shouldn't be surprised that Krishna sets up obstacles in our lives sometimes. So the cows just didn't care for the obstacles. They ran anyway. Now this is also very important what happened. The cowherd men, they're supposed to be keeping these cows separate from the calves. That's part of their job. And they're good at their job. They're devotees. They're infallible beings. They're good at their job. They're good at their service. They get it right. But they didn't. They were a failure. Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, do your service without attachment to success or failure. These cowherd men were failures. They were not able to keep the calves from going down the hill. They were not able to keep the calves from going down the hill. And they felt baffled, frustrated, and angry. Now, these are, again, vyavichari bhavs. These are ecstatic emotions. It's not like materially where I feel baffled, frustrated, and angry. My dear friends, next time we feel materially baffled, frustrated, and angry because we're trying to do something in Krishna's service and it doesn't work, there's obstacles, the other people who are supposed to be cooperating with us, they are not cooperating and it's not working, we can step back and say, huh, those are material emotions, maybe because of my pride, my attachment, and then we can meditate, how did the cowherd men feel? What was their ecstatic bafflement, frustration, anger? Is there bafflement? Is that a word? How did that feel to them? It was part of their ecstasy of love. And they come down the hill with great difficulty. The cows just, and the men with great difficulty go down the rough path. And then they were overwhelmed with anuraga prema when they saw Krishna. Like when we meditate on these cowherd men, when we have our obstacles and our failures, we meditate on them, all of our material emotions will fade away like fog in the sun. But even then, their vyavichari bhav of anger disappeared. Rupa Goswami explains how these vyavichari bhavs, these emotions, they start at one point and they come in, and then maybe a contrary emotion comes in and overwhelms it, and then they go together and they're moving like waves in the ocean. And so these ecstatic emotions of being baffled, frustrated, and angry, and love disappeared. And affection, their paternal affection, overwhelmed them as they saw their sons who were actually Krishna. And they started to embrace them and smell their heads and cry, "Oh, my son, my son, my son." And it was only with the greatest difficulty that they were able to separate the calves from the calves, from the cows and the calves, and separate themselves from their sons and go back to the forest. Well, as we said, all this time, it's been nearly a year, nobody noticed, but this time somebody noticed. This time Balaram noticed. He said, "This is really weird," he said to himself. "This is really weird. Why are the cowherd men acting like this with their children, and why did the cows act like this? How is that going on?" Now you may ask, why is it that Balaram didn't notice until just a few days before? And the reason is that Krishna didn't want Balaram to feel separation from his friends. Oh, by the way, it's not bafflement, it's baffletude. So they felt baffletude, frustration and anger. Baffletude. Next time you're feeling baffletude in the material world, remember the baffletude of the cowherd man. So Krishna didn't want Balaram to feel separation from his friends. And you could say, well, wait a minute. What about Krishna? How did Krishna himself not feel separation from his friends? And it's because that in an expanded form, Krishna was still with his friends. You remember Lord Brahma took away just these Maya boys and calves? So Krishna was still with his friends in an expanded form, looking for his calves. Now, as soon as Balaram has this desire to know, Think about ourselves. Sometimes we have a desire to know, a desire to understand. And even a materialist, you know, my godbrother, my late godbrother, Sadaputta, wrote this article about inspiration. How do scientists get inspiration? They'll be working, and then suddenly, they just know. And that happens to us too, doesn't it? We're just trying to understand something, and then we just know. Well, this happens to God also. Isn't that amazing? So what happened is Balaram wanted to know, then Yogamaya pulled back one part. And showed Balaram, there's something funny going on here. That was the first thing, because Balaram hadn't noticed for nearly a year, because Krishna didn't want him to feel separation. And when Yogamaya pulled back one part, I imagine like a window. Maybe you've seen a window where, like, the window itself is kind of translucent instead of transparent, like a window you might find in a bathroom. And then let's say over that is a sheer curtain, and over that is a thick curtain. So this thick curtain. First part of Yogamaya pull back, and Balaram notices something funny's going on. Yeah. Around here. Then Balaram employs his omniscient ability. Let me employ my omniscient ability to understand. At that point, Yogamaya pulls back the second part, the sheer curtain. And then Balaram's thinking, huh, is this some demoness who's bewildered everybody? Maybe it's a demigod who's testing the love of the Lord for the devotees. Maybe it's a sage. Then, like the windows open, the third part of Yogamaya is pulled back. Because only Krishna's Maya could bewilder Balaram. And then Balaram knows, no, it's got to be only Krishna's Maya. Then the last and fourth part of Yogamaya is pulled back. That's like you're not even looking out through a window, you go outside. And then Balaram looks at Krishna. I know it's you doing this. And says, what's going on? And Krishna tells him the story. All right, a few days later, again, it's Balaram's birthday. So again, Balaram is home. And Lord Brahma comes back. He returns to the scene of the crime. He wants to see what happened. This is 1 year later, but for Lord Brahma, it's just a moment of his time. You know, Lord Brahma's time works a little differently. Just like when King Kumuda wanted to find a husband for his daughter, Revati, and he goes to see Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma tells him to wait while he's hearing a Gandharva's performance for 20 minutes. And then afterwards he said, all the men you wanted to marry your daughter and their sons and grandsons and great-grandsons, they've all died and no one even remembers their name anymore. So for Lord Brahma, it was just a minute. Like, he took the calves and the boys, he kind of looked away, and then, you know, he just looks back. But it was, he knew it was 1 year on Earth. And he sees, wait a minute. Wait, I took the boys, I took the calves, I know I took them. In fact, I can even see them. See, they're in this cave, sleeping. They're there, sleeping. And there... Is there one set that's being moved back and forth? Are there two sets? Is one real? Is not real? Does Krishna keep switching them? And Lord Brahma, who is... I mean, we've had intelligent people here, right? Albert Einstein, smart guy. I think there's one lady has like a 230 IQ. We've got smart people. But Lord Brahma's got four brains and the whole universe is compared to his body. And he couldn't understand what was going on. Now you might think, well, what's the big deal? There's two identical sets. You know, what's not to understand about that? My dear friends, please listen very carefully. This is a very important point. And that is that every jiva is unique. Every jiva is unique. Every jiva is unique. And therefore, having two absolutely identical jivas is impossible. And Lord Brahma knows that. Now, of course, they're not absolutely the same because, as we said, there was more prema between the parents and this other set of boys and calves. So there was, they weren't actually completely identical. Each jiva is unique. We are unique. Krishna likes variety. On one tree, each branch is different from every other branch. Each leaf is different from every other leaf. Even identical twins, their hair goes in different directions. They have different fingerprints. And so he tried to understand. Lord Brahma tried to understand. Yadyapi samadhishu vidura pasyanti natava nakagra marichin. Although in deep samadhi, even Lord Brahma cannot see your toe tip shining so brightly, Rupa Goswami says. In meditation and samadhi, he went deep into samadhi and he could not understand because he had offended Krishna by taking the boys and the calves. Although Krishna wove it into his pastimes, and although Brahma is the most powerful person in the universe, his power was like snow in the nighttime or like a firefly, a glowworm in the day. When one shows one's power before a superior power, we only look foolish. And while Brahma was trying to use his own power to understand, the Lord had compassion on him. And each boy and each calf manifested as Lord Vishnu, with the unique marks of the Lord, the Srivatsa, the Kaustubha jewel, You know, when Sanatana Goswami Vriha Bhagavatamrita describes coming to the gate of Gopakumar, coming to the gate of Vaikuntha, and Gopakumar keeps seeing these devotees with Swarup Yamukti. And he's like, oh my Lord Vishnu, no, no, I'm a servant. So there are devotees who look practically like the Lord, but this was not like that. These were all the Lord. Actually, each Vishnu was the Lord of a universe. Each Vishnu was glancing at the pious devotees. The glance was like Rajagun. It was like the mode of passion, but actually it was affection, because the pure form of Rajagun is affection. Whenever we are influenced by Rajagun, we can step back and meditate on this affection of the Lord. Meditate on this affection of the Lord. That is its actual pure form. And then, such a beautiful thing of this affection, this Lord glance of affection at all the devotees surrounding him, because there were devotees surrounding each Vishnu form, it created desires for service in the devotees who were otherwise desireless. So the devotees are fully satisfied just to be in the presence of the Lord. But just like the mode of passion creates desires and hankering in a conditioned soul, so the Lord's affection creates desires for service and reciprocation in the desireless devotees. Lord Brahma saw that each Vishnu was worshipped by all living entities, and that everyone was engaged in service according to their own nature, that everyone receives a form according to the way one worships the Lord. If we're an illusion, then our forms are given by the demigods according to the stars. And if we're in love, then our forms are the highest beauty and fulfillment of all of our desires. Every single living entity was worshipping these Vishnu forms according to their abilities, and they were all singing and dancing. The ultimate nature of reality, as explained when Lord Varaha goes back to Vaikuntha after killing Hiranyaksha, is that every day is a festival. Every day is a festival. There is always singing and dancing. And the Lord was surrounded also by the personification of all of his energies, all of his opulences, Sri, Virya, Jnana, Vairagya, Aishwarya. They were all personified, surrounding him and dependent on him. All mystic powers, anima, lagima, prapti, siddhi, by time itself, past, present, and future, personified, dependent on him. Personal nature in connection with sattvagun, rajagun, tamagun. All the material elements, bhumirala, panalo, vayu, kamano, buddha, evja. The samskaras that cause memory and forgetfulness, matas, matir, gyanam, apohanam, cha. Imagine the personified forgetfulness multiplied by each Vishnu. Personified forgetfulness, personified memory, personified knowledge around each Vishnu. The nature of desire, the nature of action or karma. And Lord Brahma, seeing this, all of these Vishnus reciprocating with each devotee individually, all of these personified energies, he experiences the bhava of wonder, this sattvika bhava of being stunned. And in these ecstasies, he looks like a golden doll, just still. Lord Brahma has full control over Sarasvati, the goddess of learning, who's his wife. There's a Sarasvati, a spiritual Sarasvati, who's the wife of Vishnu. Lord Brahma is the best authority in Vedic knowledge. And yet, he looked like a puppet. He looked like a clay doll compared to the deity. And he realized, I'm not the Lord of the universe. I'm not the Lord of anything. I'm just one of the demigods. I just couldn't understand what's going on. Then he couldn't even see. Then Krishna pulls back his yogamaya. Krishna can be seen only through his own revelation. And when Krishna pulled back this display, Brahma, who had fallen down, he stood up and he opened his eyes. It was like coming back from the dead. Then he saw, oh, this is my universe. I'm the Lord. I'm the possessor of the universe. I am the creator of the universe. Oh, here's Vrindavan. Just see. All the seasons are here. And all the trees are pleasing in all seasons. We try that in a garden, you know. We're planting a garden here. And we tried to pick plants that would look nice in all the seasons. Here, of course, we just have four. But there in Vrindavan, he saw that all the trees and all the plants always look pleasing. And he saw there was no envy, no lust, and no greed. And he saw that all living entities, even those who were naturally inimical like tigers and deer, were living in cooperation. We think of how Mahaprabhu got the tigers and deer to dance in the Jharkhand forest. Then Lord Brahma offered his obeisances. Generally, when the demigods come to earth, they don't touch the ground. They remain in their own sphere of reality. They maintain in their own understanding of time and their own understanding of space. They don't actually come into our time and space. But out of humility and love, Lord Brahma touched the ground. He gave up the false prestige of a demigod that doesn't touch the ground. All four of his helmets touched the Lord's lotus feet. I don't know how he quite did that. Does he turn his head around? I don't know how that works spatially. And he had purified tears of joy that were washing the Lord's feet. Again, he saw the Lord like a little boy, holding food in his left hand as if he was an uneducated, uncultured village boy, holding food in his left hand and looking everywhere as if he was bewildered. Where are my calves and my boys? And Lord Brahma gets up and falls in Dandavats, and gets up and falls in Dandavats, and gets up and falls in Dandavats over and over and over and over and over again. Reminding us of when Arjuna sees a universal form and he says, obeisances from the front, from behind, and from all sides. Sukadev, telling this story, is speaking in the present tense because he's actually witnessing the pastime as he's telling it. Then Lord Brahma speaks wonderful prayers. Of course, we're now in the 14th chapter, and we don't have time to go through all of these prayers. Each of these prayers could take us a year to meditate on, but we're going to look at just a few of them that are particularly notable. So in verse 3, Stanes tita shruti gatam tanuvan manovir. This verse was spoken by Ramananda Roy to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Majjha Lila, chapter 8, text 67. And it's something that's quoted quite a bit, the way Srila Prabhupada translates it in his purport to Bhagavatam 4:24-53, is regardless of one's condition of life, stanisthita. Stanisthita means your place, you stay there. Stop means to stay. You stay in your place. Regardless of one's condition of life, if he practices bhakti yoga, which begins with hearing shruti gatam, the transcendental messages of the Lord through the mouths of the devotees, he gradually conquers the unconquerable Lord. Prabhupada quotes this also in the story of Gajendra, where he talks about that if you're not fit for sannyas, then become a grihastha. Doesn't matter. Whatever position is suitable for you, you find that suitable position. We don't need to spend a whole lot of time and energy adjusting our material position. I mean, sometimes, moving a piece of furniture around can make all the difference. Right? Sometimes going to bed at a different time can make all the difference. Eating a different food can make all the difference. So sometimes, my own suggestion is put no more than 10% of your energy into adjusting your situation and 90% of your energy into being Krishna conscious in whatever situation you're in. Stanistita shruchigitam tanuvan manobir. And then, of course, very famous verse, text 8, tate nukampam sukshamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam ridvad vapurvir vidadan namaste jivete yo mukti pade sadayabhak. This is, of course, the verse that Sarvabrahma Bhattacharya tried to change to Bhakti Pade. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So, just having the proper response to suffering guarantees us entrance into the spiritual world. Then 25 and 26. A person who mistakes a rope for a snake becomes fearful, but he then gives up his fear upon realizing that the so-called snake does not exist. The conception of material bondage and the conception of liberation are both manifestations of ignorance. Being outside the scope of true knowledge, they cease to exist when one correctly understands that the pure spirit soul is distinct from matter and always fully conscious. At that time, bondage and liberation no longer have any significance, just as day and night have no significance from the perspective of the sun. Now please listen very carefully as to how Srila Prabhupada explains this in Krishna book, these two verses, 25 and 26. Please listen very carefully. This is a key that unlocks great understanding and happiness and freedom. The existence of Maya is only within the mind. Maya is nothing but ignorance of your personality. When one forgets your personality, that is the conditioned state of Maya. Therefore, one who is fixed upon you both internally and externally is not illusioned. Many places Srila Prabhupada says, for the pure devotee, there is no material world. There is no material world. There is no material world. The existence of Maya is only within the mind. Another very famous prayer is text 34. My greatest, this is one also, some of these are mentioned in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita as the nectar verses at the end. Sanatana Goswami picks a lot of verses from this chapter to use as nectar verses. Also, Rupa Goswami picks a lot of, often he picks items from this pastime to use as illustrations of Vyavichari Bhavs and Sattvika Bhavs and Anubhavs in the Southern Ocean. So 34, my greatest possible good fortune would be to take my birth, whatever, in this forest of Gokula, and to have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Generally, this is interpreted that Lord Brahma was praying to be grass, something like Uddhava, who said, I'll be a creeper. So Krishna hears all these prayers, and unlike when Indra offered prayers after the Govardhan Lila, Krishna is silent. He doesn't say anything. Doesn't say very nice, doesn't say not very nice, doesn't chastise him. Just silent. Now Krishna has a lot of affection for Brahma, and he certainly forgives him. In fact, another one of his prayers, Lord Brahma says, just like the mother forgives the child in the womb who kicks him. So why does Krishna stay silent? Somehow or other, the acharyas say in this pastime, he didn't want to get out of his role, that I'm a little cowherd boy. And so he's just thinking, who is this guy? What does he want? Who is this Brahma? What does he want? So just with kind of a gesture, he tells him to return. Krishna likes to speak through his eyes, through his gestures. And Brahma takes the silence as an order to return, that even though he said, I want to be here in Vrindavan in some capacity, that first he had to finish the duties given to him as Lord Brahma before he can take birth in Vrindavan. So, you know, sometimes we're very anxious to retire, or sometimes we're very anxious to go back to home, back to Godhead. And Krishna, I have some service for you to do. I have some things for you to do. Then Krishna returns back to his friends, who had stayed in the same place for 1 year. And they thought it was just a moment. They're like, hey, you were going to go look for our calves and you were gone so fast. We haven't even eaten anything while you were gone. Now, what's really interesting is generally, usually when you're separate from Krishna, it feels like a whole yuga's going past. In this case, they were separate, and because of Yoga Maya, they felt like it was only a moment. And they like to congratulate, oh, yay, Krishna, you were gone just a moment, we didn't even take a bite, you already found the cows, woohoo! We're so happy that you came back. We just like blinked our eyes and you were back. And then they're so happy they finished their lunch and they cleaned up and they took the calves. And they're going back to the Vrindavan village and Krishna's calling all the calves by name. You know, Krishna has his japa beads made out of jewels. And for each bead, like, you know, Mahaprabhu got in trouble with his students for chanting the names of the gopis. And Krishna... we chant our japa beads. We're chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna on his beads. He's chanting the name of the cows, Hamsi, Dwavali. And on their way home, they see the dead body of Agasura. Now, also, it's kind of funny that they don't think, ah, boy, that really dried up fast. He was killed this morning. And it's already dried up. Anyway, they saw the dead body of Agasura. And when Krishna comes back with all the boys and the calves, he's a festival for the eyes. Right? We have that term in modern society, eye candy, something that's very beautiful to look at. But Krishna is the greatest festival for the eyes. And now, the cowherd boys are glorifying. Guess what Krishna did today? Guess what Krishna did today? He killed the Agasura demon. So now Krishna's older. And Nanda Maharaj says it's time for Krishna to have his own room. He builds Krishna a separate room to sleep in. But Lord Brahma goes back to the abode of Satyaloka. And he tells all of his associates, like the cowherd boys are telling their friends and their family, Krishna killed Agasura, Krishna killed Agasura. So Brahma goes to his associates and says, I got to tell you what happened today. How I took the boys and the calves and how Krishna expanded and he was Vishnu. And then again he experiences all these ecstasies, all the Vyavichari bhavs, all the Sattvika bhavs in great wonder. So Maharaj Parikshit had a question. He said, how is it that these residents of Vrindavan, how is it that they loved their boys more when the boys were Krishna? How is it that they love Krishna more than anyone else? This is one of my favorite sections where Sukadeva Goswami says, you know, each of us loves ultimately ourself. We love our family, we love our friends, our community, our society, but ultimately that's because we love ourself. And you can say we love our body, we love our mind, but ultimately we love the self, the soul. And Krishna is the Paramatma. He is the self of the self. He is the super self. Our own self is most dear, and Krishna is the self of the self. So of course, he's most dear. Then Sukadeva Goswami says something, which was also said earlier in the 10th canto. When Krishna was in Devaki's womb, the demigods prayed to him, and they made this wonderful prayer. But this prayer is also, this point is also mentioned by Sukadeva Goswami here. This material world is a great ocean, samsara dava nalalita loka. It's a great ocean of tribulation, birth, death, old age, and disease, adibhautik, adiatmik, adidaivik. Constantly in Kali Yuga, we're having some kind of suffering, some kind of difficulty, at least one of these difficulties, if not all of them. Plus, we have so many material desires, so many frustrations, so many anartas, so many obstacles. And it just seems like getting to Krishna is this huge ocean. But there is a boat on the side of the ocean. There is a boat to cross the ocean. And even though the saintly persons go in this boat to cross the ocean, it never leaves this side of the shore. That is the boat of Krishna's lotus feet. And as soon as we approach the boat, we don't even have to get in. As soon as we approach the boat, there's a magic that happens to this ocean. If you can imagine a little calf and it's walking on muddy ground, and how big of a footprint is it going to make? This big? So those of us who don't see a lot of calves, we can maybe think of a big dog. The hoof print of a calf. You know. 2-3 inches, so what's that? 6-8 centimeters. Filled with water. You don't even notice walking over. You're not even aware that you're stepping over it. It's so small. You don't even worry you're going to get your feet muddy. You just step over it. And as soon as one approaches the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, the ocean becomes like the hoof print of a calf. Anyone who recites this story, anyone who hears this story, anyone who even desires to recite this story, anyone who even desires to hear this story, will have all of their spiritual desires fulfilled. Once again, this presentation was taken from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapters 13 and 14. It was also taken from Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, chapters 13 and 14. It was taken from the commentaries of the Acharyas, especially Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, also Sridhar Swami. It was also taken from other books describing these leelas, such as the Ananda Vrindavan Champu of Kavi Kanapur and the Gopal Champu of Jiva Goswami. So I really want to express my appreciation for the strategic planning team of the GBC that invited me to speak on this subject and invited me to go deep into these pastimes, to try to study them and present them to you. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for in 1970, with a very young movement and very young disciples, to have produced this Krishna book. Thank you to George Harrison, who, because of a lightning bolt, funded the printing of the Krishna book. And thank you to all the many devotees all over the world who went out in airports and parking lots and out on the street to distribute this Krishna book to people in general. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you so much, Hare Prabhu. There's a little bit of a feedback, so I've just muted your mic. But thank you so much. This was such a beautiful narration. When I was listening to you, it was just like visualizing the pastime. Thank you so much for taking us along on this beautiful, beautiful journey. Your deep realizations from reading so many of these wonderful books was presented in such a sweet pastime narration. Thank you so much again. Thank you so much to all our viewers for your active participation. We've been receiving so many wonderful comments. For those of you that have been asking about Urmila Prabhu's blog and her website, we have that posted in the comments. Also, it's urmiladevidasi.org. It's also flashing on our screen right now. Please go check out. There's so many wonderful resources, lectures. Even for Govardhan Puja, there's an amazing resource section for the children, our wonderful young readers. Also, thank you so much for your active participation for all these wonderful series that we have. And it's going to continue for the rest of this auspicious month of Karthik. So stay tuned. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to our GBC SBT channel on YouTube, Facebook, and you can also subscribe to our newsletter to be updated about the upcoming events. We have an amazing line of speakers coming up, so stay tuned. Thank you so much again, Urmila Prabhu.
One thing I should add, somebody just wrote me a message that the way that Lord Brahma's four crowns were each touching Krishna's feet was that he was rolling. So he offered dandavats, and then he was rolling, and by rolling, each of the four crowns were able to touch Krishna's feet. So I just got that message sent to me.
Thank you so much for adding that. That's beautiful. Yeah, like we see devotees doing dandavat parikrama. Now this was a rolling parikrama or something. That is amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Deeply appreciate your participation. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.